Intervju Radija Študent.
Spoštovane poslušalke, cenjeni poslušalci Radija Študent, nahajamo se tukaj na vrtu ene meščanske hiše nekje v Ljubljani. Z nami pa je čelistka Lori Goldstein iz Seattla, ki bo nocoj v njeni sobi odigrala en manjši koncert, pa pred tem pa smo tukaj na vrtu še za krajši intervju. And first, hello, Lori.
Hello.
So, first, can you tell me, this is a house concert, and this is not really the usual way to present your music. How long have you been doing gigs like this? Because I also noticed you got another house concert coming up in 3 days.
I have always done shows that were all different sizes, so I often in Seattle do small, yeah, house shows, small spaces, sometimes bigger spaces too, but I always like a small room, and then I can play acoustic and hang out, be in a nice community of people, and kind of end up with people I would be friends with probably if I lived here.
So this is a rather regular activity for you, because it ain't so regular type of concerts around here.
I like a lot of variety, and this is definitely a regular part of what I do.
And what will you be playing today? The same stuff that you play on the tour that's currently going on, or you got another set, more intimate, prepared maybe?
I've been playing similar things every night, but it changes depending on the space and the room and what's happening. But it's is about the kind of thing I've been doing.
Mm-hmm. And I'm gonna ask some about your music, because I noticed that you did a lot of compositions and improvisations upon silent films. And could you, like Nosferatu, Jeanne of Arc, Dante's Inferno, also lots of movies and documentaries.
Yeah.
Could you elaborate on your connection with the cinematic, with the moving images?
Yeah, I've always liked film. I've always been very interested in film, and there have been a lot of good presenters, archivists, projectionists in Seattle for a long time. So I've worked with a lot of people who had ongoing series in Seattle, Dennis Nyback, and there have been a few organizations, Northwest Film Forum and the film festival there. So I have kind of gotten out of it at times, but always ended up back in it. But I've been really interested in silent films since I was a teenager.
A thought occurred to me, could you say that a cello is a rather really cinematic instrument, very suggestive and evocative, maybe even compared to some other instruments?
I think so, yeah, very, it's a kind of inherently dramatic instrument, I think.
And when you do music for films, you probably think about composing in a much different way than when you, let's say, compose abstract music that stands on its own?
Yeah, it's nice challenge, because and I think I've learned a lot from it, to have a kind of a narrative thread running through it, and then think about the kind of the dynamics of a story and tension and release of tension. And so it's a nice challenge to have to think about an hour and a half's worth of music, I guess, as a kind of a body of work that moves along, as opposed to sort of, you know, 3 minute songs, 10 minute songs, 20 minute songs.
And you also sometimes play music and compose for dance shows. And what are the specifics when composing music for dance performances? Is anything different? Do you do anything different compared, let's say, when you already got a prepared set of moving images?
Yeah, it has a kind of a different sort of abstraction for me, and I maybe have a little bit of that neurological disease where like synesthesia, where you sort of, where people see colors or whatever, and so I for me, visual movement is nice to translate into sound, sort of moving sound. So it has a particular kind of abstraction to sort of take something moving through space and then kind of turn it into sound in a way.
And you also had lecture called Alternate Tracks, Reimagining Classic Film Scores. Could you say what was the main point of the lecture? I mean, I think it's a long time ago, but...
Yeah, it was a long time ago. I'm trying to think of what the gist of that was. I think it was, yeah, sort of just to look back, and maybe also they were thinking in terms of back when things were used more, where scores were used acoustic instruments more, and there were sort of these certain pivotal moments when people really broke out of the mold. So I think maybe it was sort of a certain touch points when there were these revolutionary moments.
And what about your other bands? The bands you collaborated in. There's a huge number of them with sort of, you know, say big names. Did they call upon you, or is this all the you all come from the same scene and you know the, let's say, Cat Power, The Wedding Present, David Byron? I had another one in my mind.
It sort of depends. Yeah, there was nothing very, logical or businessy that made any of it happen. It was all sort of friends of friends or, there's sort of a more or less interesting story for each one of them, and it was all different. But I generally operate in a pretty serendipitous way.
Your latest collaboration was with Earth, the band Earth.
Oh yeah.
And can you say, was it any different from the music that you used to do, which is more solemn maybe than the one you did with Earth?
You think my music is more solemn than Earth? Earth's pretty solemn. it was tricky. It was tricky to get used to. I mean, Earth sort of really has its own musical universe that it functions in. So that was a tricky job.
You're still continuing your work with them? I mean, besides touring?
Yeah, nothing right now. But yeah, I mean, there's a general feeling of it being ongoing over a long period of time. But they're not touring right now or anything. But yeah, so still, you know, I see them and I hang out with them and stuff. And so the feeling is that we'll do some work again before long, probably.
So you're... probably only regular band for what 15 maybe 20 years has been Black Cat Orchestra, and I've only listened to them a little, but they've got a really Eastern European feel to them. Where did you meet this type of music?
You know, I'm not sure. I got interested in that. Part of it was just the instrumentation sort of lent itself to that, and that band mostly got formed with not thinking so much about finding somebody who played something, but more like finding the person, and they happened to play a particular instrument, so it ended up kind of accordion and horn heavy, so it sort of moved in that direction, and then it had this certain kind of, you know, darkness or heaviness, and that also moved it in that direction, and so from there we got very interested in that music and ended up studying it, and then moving a little bit sort of east of there, studying Turkish music, and there are a lot of people in Seattle and on the West Coast in general and in America who really like that music, and so there are a lot of different scenes, and so that's sort of one of many kinds of scenes I have sort of lurked on the edges of for many years.
The Seattle scene is mostly remembered for the time that happened in the mid-90s, early 90s. What about now? Is it still as lively as, let's say, 15, 20 years ago?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's better. It's way better.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was very good before all those bands got popular, and then it was not so good, I think, for a long time, and there was a lot of ambitious drive rather than a sort of artistic drive, and I think now it's kind of made a full circle, and there's really great. It's just a great music scene right now. Really good players, all kinds of people mixing in bands and different kinds of bands playing together, and a lot of places to play. It's pretty great right now.
In what, about 20 years ago, 19 years ago, you had a concert here in Ljubljana with one of the more famous bands from Seattle.
I never toured Europe with Nirvana.
But you were playing here, right?
No, I played here about 11 years ago, I think, with a band, Serenity Ensemble, and then, I didn't do a Europe tour with Nirvana. I just did a U.S. tour with them.
There's a wrong info circling the internet, but.
The internet's full of false rumors, as
well,
we all know.
Okay, 11 years still is relatively a long time. What are your memories from the gig that you had here in Ljubljana the last time? If you have any, of course.
You know, I don't remember that one that well. In 2000, I spent about a week here with my friend Jana Wilcoxon, and so I have spent a lot of time here, and those are sort of stronger memories than the show that I did here with them. And I was actually, I have really just that kind of haziest, dreamiest recollection of that show that I did with Serenity Ensemble here. So mostly, if I think about Ljubljana, I think about Jana's house and her family and riding my bike around for a week, and it was really heavenly week, and so that was sort of just a very quick stop off. I think it was, it was probably 16 hours in Ljubljana, just show up and play and wake up in the morning and go kind of thing, yeah.
But my editor said that you got a special fondness, supposedly, for a radio student.
I do.
How come?
I listen at home often.
Yeah? For the internet stream.
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
And what, you probably know about it through Jana or for Chris?
Exactly, yes, from that week that I was here. And then we have listened often because, here I am. I play in rock bands. I'm married to an accordionist. I have this kind of weird, I sort of am a little jazzy and kind of experimental. And I have this kind of funny little bit Eastern European band. So it's, kind of my dream radio station.
Well, it's a nice place. Also, somewhere you said, for something completely different, however, you said you were classically trained and rigorously detrained.
Oh, yeah.
And can you tell me, what did you have to lose from your cello education?
I started on guitar, and then I took up cello, and my training was, very traditional training on cello. And for many years, I found I could... I started on guitar when I was 7, and I was very free on it, and I felt like I could just make up songs and improvise and play things by ear. And then my training on the cello really didn't kind of open my thinking up in the same way, and so it was a little bit hard to integrate those things. But eventually, I got there. Now I actually feel a lot freer on the cello than guitar. My guitar playing's kind of rusty, but it sort of is built into the culture of guitar playing in a way that it's not built into the culture of kind of more classical instruments.
Well, you probably sort of start up with cello in the context of classical music.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, do you still occasionally, does it interest you? Do you listen to it or?
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I love to do it, yeah. I don't do it usually professionally. Mostly because I've never really been in that kind of orbit in Seattle. Because I mean, now if I go to New York, maybe if I talk to my cello teacher from college, she'll say, oh, you want an orchestra concert? There's one I can't do. But I've never really been in that circle in Seattle, so it just has always kept me in more in kind of band and experimental music world than in classical world in Seattle.
Well, you also are teaching cello.
Yeah, a bit. Yeah.
And which is your starting point, classical music, or you already start with the more alternative rock thing?
Yeah, it depends on the student. I change, yeah, I'm pretty flexible about it. If it's small kids, usually it's pretty kind of traditional training, because I love that I had the training. I mean, I feel like it'd be nice to make people feel more open in addition to that, but I think it's wonderful to read music, and it's really nice to be able to play chamber music, and some people like to be in an orchestra, so it's nice to feel like that's like you're not shut out of that world.
Well, somewhere said nobody else plays like I do, and I'm wondering, what are the specifics that you think are idiosyncratic for your playing?
Well, I like mistakes a lot more than most cellists do, and I think my sound is very, my playing has been really influenced by playing amplified a lot and playing with guitarists and in bands who think in a more kind of timbral way and not so much note, you know. I have a pretty broad kind of textural palette, so I would say that's probably the main thing.
I recently talked with Tristan Honsinger,
yeah,
the cello player, and when I asked him about Evan Reisiger,
yeah,
he said that his only thought was that he always wants his cello to sound perfect, and that he doesn't agree with that.
Oh yeah, I saw Honsinger play recently. I don't think I'd ever seen him play, and he played in Seattle recently, and it was really nice to see just how loose, and that's a sort of a very Dutch thing, I think, that they just like for things to sort of sound like everything's about to just fall apart or explode or something like that. It's a lovely aesthetic, yeah.
Well, and you still play guitar from time to time?
Yeah, sometimes, yeah.
Uh-huh. And could you say you approached the cello as if playing a guitar, and that was that your starting point, or did you start anew?
I think the it's okay. I'll let you edit it up. I think that the guitar playing snuck in later on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what, today are we going to hear more of an improvisational set, or is it going to be pre-composed music?
No, it's pretty improvised, and then maybe sort of touch on some composed things. That's, maybe this, I can't tell, maybe the set is getting a little bit, making its own composition over the course of this tour. I think it's maybe the eighth show or seventh show on the tour, so I've been wondering if it's sort of starting to settle into a one long piece now.
Well, I think we're gonna finish this chat, at least till the concert starts.
Yeah.
It's gonna be more of a monologue, but well, thank you for your time, and that's it.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Okay.
Intervju Radija Študent.